I'd like to welcome everyone for coming. Thanks for coming out to our discussion here at the Socialist Alliance Center. We're going to be talking about breaking the Queensland coal addiction. I'll just give a little rundown of what order we're going to follow, and then we'll just dive right into it. Our first speaker is Dr. John McKenzie. He's coming to us from Friends of the Earth Climate Collective. Following that, we have Christy Walters from the University of Queensland Environment. Right, so first speaker is Dr. John McKenzie from Friends of the Earth.
Handed this while I was waiting, and I thought it's a nice little thing to sort of put up there just to remind ourselves, I guess, of what we're here for and really what this state is all about in so many ways historically and currently. And perhaps if people don't mind, I might not stand behind, I might just sort of stand in front, if that's okay. You can hear me, everyone can hear me pretty well. I'm a little bit nervous about having the lights turned out because my talk is going to be a little bit boring. I imagine there's some of you probably going to fall to sleep, so I hope that doesn't happen. But what I really wanted to do was, I know that Dom and Christy are really going to sort of outline for us the process by which we can oppose the Queensland coal industry and some of the things that are happening to it. What I wanted to do was give us really I described it as I'll give the diagnosis and they can present us with the cure. What I wanted to make clear from the outset is just the scope of the Queensland coal industry. Its expansions within this state, its contribution to this state, and its contribution to climate change in ways that haven't been recognised and haven't been talked about. And what I want to make the point fundamentally is that we can't address climate change without addressing coal in Queensland. So here's what we know. We know that climate change is happening. We know it's the most damaging, the most dangerous effect, a series of effects and puts at risk the future of the ability of humans to survive on this planet. Okay. We know that climate change isn't an environmental problem. We've come to terms with that. What we understand it now is that it's a social and economic problem and a political problem. The crisis that we're in, one of the consequences of that is climate change, and it's the most dangerous and damaging effect in those terms as well. We know that the main cause of climate change is burning of fossil fuels, and we know that coal is the dirtiest of all of the fossil fuels. Here's what else we know. We know that in terms of coal, we live in the biggest coal exporting state in the biggest coal exporting country in the world, in Queensland. We know that successive governments in this state have pursued an expansive extraction of the coal industry. We know that successive governments, regardless of their particular political persuasion, have always regarded Queensland as Quarry Queensland. Yeah? That everything about the direction that they've gone in terms of policy, creating a policy environment, creating an economic set of circumstances, has been to promote the expansion of the coal industry. The example that I always use, you know something about a state when the closest government building to Parliament House is a building called Mineral House. And you can measure it out in steps. I mean, from time immemorial, Queensland has been about coal and a few cows, but predominantly coal. And regardless of success, regardless of governments that have been in power at any given point in time, that's always been the direction. We know that that hasn't changed with our most recent change of premier. In fact, our current premier is pursuing an expansion of the coal industry unprecedented to date, absolutely unprecedented, and to the extent that I'm not even really sure that I can comprehend just the rapidity at which this expansion is taking place. It's quite phenomenal. We know that the Liberal National, whatever they are these days, the great two-headed beast that's supposedly going to combine those two ideologies, we know that they're unlikely to see any reduction to the coal industry under any set of circumstances. So we know that the consequences of... We know that changes to the coal industry in terms of reducing the amount of exports and the amount of production are unlikely to happen from either of the major political parties and will not be promoted by any political party with any chance of gaining power. So that has pretty important implications for the way that we address the issues of climate change. So all of those factors combined lead me to a fairly sort of interesting conclusion, I think, which is that campaigning against coal, fighting against coal, and ultimately shutting down the coal industry in Queensland is at once the most critical and at the same time the most difficult campaign that's ever been waged by the environment movement in Australia. And in particular in Queensland, where this is literally the coal face. I mean, this is where the action against climate change begins. Because if we're looking to reduce the amount of coal that's burnt in the world, And we're here, which is another factor. But predominantly, the biggest coal exporting state and the biggest coal exporting country in the world has to be the place that we start. But it's more important than that. And I want to run through a few statistics just to demonstrate the extent to which coal is the impact of coal on climate change within Queensland. Coal is planting trees, changing light bulbs. I've been doing a little bit of maths. The carbon offset of planting 1 million trees. Now, this Planet Ark, you might have heard of Planet Ark, they've been running for 10 years, yeah? And they proudly announced in their most recent press release that they've planted over 1 million trees in the course of their 10 years. So they've invested some... You're too quick.
Sorry.
All of that investment, all of that time, all of that energy, in terms of the carbon offset that's been generated by that, it would be completely negated by the emissions of the Queensland coal industry in under 7 hours. That's 10 years' worth of campaigning, of promoting, of fundraising, of organising, of getting people out, 7 hours' worth of coal industry emissions. Maybe not planting trees, maybe changing light bulbs. That seems to be a more predominant sort of approach. The annual carbon offset from changing... I started with some low numbers. I thought, no, stuff it. Every person in Australia changes one light bulb. Let's do that. You know, that's got to have a massive impact on carbon emissions. So 20 million light bulbs from 60-watt incandescents to a compact fluorescent would be completely negated by the Queensland coal industry in 32 hours. Let's go on. Let's move on. Every day I go past this iron. It sits up South Brisbane. It's the BP Global Choice Initiative. And it sits on this billboard, and they're like, we've offset through our Global Choice Emission, our Global Choice Initiative, we've offset 2 million tonnes of carbon dioxide. And the byline, as though they're calling out the environment movement, is like, talk stopped long ago. It's like, you know, bring it. So I bought it. I went to their website. We're leading our competitors with this unique program, blah, blah, blah. We've offset over 2 million tonnes of greenhouse gas emissions. 7 years after our launch, our BP Global Choice program has made a reduction equivalent to taking 400,000 cars off the road. Mm-hmm. Brad, if you will. Entire effort is negated by the emissions of the Queensland coal industry in less than 2 days. And so given that that's taken 7 years to go, one more on this one, it means that this unique program would have to run for 1,324 years to offset the emissions from the Queensland coal industry for 1 year. Talk stopped long ago, perhaps. The bullshit's just started. And that's that's worthy of a big billboard as far as they're concerned. They mentioned that that's the equivalent of taking 400,000 cars off the road. So I thought, oh, that's an interesting statistic. You know, I can use that as a basis. So I thought, what would happen, Brad, if you like, what would happen if 11 point all of the vehicles in Australia were taken off the road for a year? And because I'm such a nerd, I went to the ABS Motor Vehicle Census to find out exactly how many vehicles that was. It's just what I do in my spare time. So if we took every single car off the road for a year in Australia, that would be the equivalent of shutting down the coal industry in Queensland for just 47 days. Every single car, motorbike, truck, light vehicle. What I'm not saying is that all of these things are useless. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be working towards efficiency gains. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be reducing our vehicle emissions. I'm not saying that, you know, we should try and plant trees and create offset opportunities to try and reduce our emissions. What I am saying is if we do all of that stuff in combination, you know, as hard as we can, and we don't address the coal industry, you'll excuse the expression, but we're pissing in the wind, yeah? I mean, it is completely negated by the expansion. Sorry for the masculine metaphor. Boys will understand what that means. But... All of that effort amounts to nothing if we're increasing the scope of the coal industry. And in particular, it amounts to nothing if that's expanding, and it's expanding at the rate that it currently is. So as I say, I want to give a few... You know, it was George Bernard Shaw, I think, who said that the mark of a superior intellect was to be emotionally moved by statistics. So let's see how you go. There's a few graphs and a few tables and so forth in this. So I'm going to try and move you emotionally with some statistics. But just the facts, just so that we can really understand the scope of this issue. I mean, that gives you a bit of a sense, but I really want to sort of depict what's happening in Queensland and try and get a handle on... the extent of the expansion and what are some of the drivers of it, and to inform our discussions later on about what we do about it, and to see if we can't identify any points within the process that we might be able to intervene in. This is, and any professors of geology that are present can feel free to critique my analysis, but this is just a series of tables. I guess I was interested in this idea about how much coal do we have left. And some people were saying, you know, peak coal, and some people were saying we've got endless supplies of coal. Most of that is boring. I guess important things to bear in mind that in terms of demonstrated resources, recoverable about 40 gigatons in situ, which may or may not be recoverable, and the demonstrated resources. Now, given the fact that our rates of extraction change and those different particular reserves will vary in terms of their ability to be accessed, I think the best estimate that you can have is to look at the accessible economically demonstrated resource, which is about 40 gigatons, and the, what they call the JORC resources, which is proven and probable, which is their collection of proven and probable resources, which means that we probably have about 53 gigatons of coal in Australia, which is probably about 142 years left of supply in terms at current extraction rates. So this idea of peak coal, I'm not convinced by it. I think we do have a lot of coal left. I think that the people that are promoting the expansion of coal have a lot of time on their hands. The rest of the planet, not so much. That's all I wanted to say in relation to that. But what I did also want to say, can we just move along, what I wanted to say as well is that in terms of that black coal reserve, about 30 gigatons are located in Queensland in situ, so 30 of that 57. So really you're looking at a situation where Queensland does have the bulk of the coal. The coal in Victoria is all brown coal. We're really looking in terms of Queensland, there's four main basins and one smaller basin. You would have heard of the Bowen Basin, obviously. That's where 85%, I think. You might have better statistics than I. About 85% of current coal is mined from the Bowen Basin. The Surat Basin in Queensland is relatively untapped at this stage, but under current proposals for expansion, that looks like a place where it's really going to be targeting next. Certainly New South Wales, in the Surat Basin in New South Wales has been targeted to some degree. And the Galilee Basin also hasn't been tapped yet, but there's... amongst some of the proposals, more recent proposals, the Galilee region seems to be next on the cards. But in terms of the importance of Queensland, I mean, you can just see the extent to which the domination of coal is coming from this part of the world. Some summary statistics, again, just to keep you excited and to, you know, and if there's any insomniacs, this might take you to the level. I want to just point out a couple of things. The reduction of the figures in the 2007-2008 are a bit rubbery, but production level dropped quite significantly in 2007-2008 due to the floods in the Bowen Basin and the impact of that. Now, the impact of that, which arguably, I mean, you don't want to take this line in public, but arguably, you know, that's a climate change-fueled event. Now, the impact that that's had worldwide on the global coal industry, I'll talk about. Well, you might not think so in a moment. In terms of the exports, the bulk of our coal is export. You'll see that over time there hasn't really been that much variation in our actual domestic use. It's about 26 megatons per year, somewhere between 24 and 26 megatons per year, and that's pretty static. It's only really growing at a fairly low rate. So the bulk of our coal is really being used for export. Employment, we often hear a lot about the coal jobs. In Queensland, we're looking at about 18,000 people. It's not a huge number. Even if we accept that there's a flow-on effect into the economy based on those coal jobs, the extent to which that it makes up a significant amount of the coal of the employment in this state is relatively overstated, in my opinion. Another thing to bear in mind in terms of this argument about jobs, and I'll probably come back to this, was there was a huge reduction in the amount of jobs circa 2001-2002 in relation to the coal industry, where you had a contraction to about 7,000 or 8,000 people employed by the coal industry. Now, that wasn't anything to do with mining or changes to circumstances. It was to do with the fact that the major companies undertook a big consolidation, and as part of that, for economic efficiency purposes, a whole bunch of people were laid off. So you had a reduction of about, in some parts, of about a third of the coal industry workforce. Now, I can't recall one single instance of any government standing up and saying, oh, the coal industry jobs. So as long as that change is being driven by the big ugly stepsisters of the coal industry, then the jobs aren't an issue. But as soon as it's climate change related, jobs become a big issue. The value of the exports, bear those numbers in mind, about $17 billion for the state of Queensland. It's not an insignificant amount of money. These are not poor, struggling coal You know, we're not talking about the poor struggling coal miners. We're talking about industries that are massively resourced and massive and earn profits that would make your head spin. Here's the production of Queensland coal. I mean, it's pretty consistent. You can see that to the extent to which coal has increased. But, the irony of this is that we've gone from about 3 million tonnes worth of coal in the 1960s up to now, where we're looking at about 226, 230 million tonnes of production in a very, very small amount of time. This graph will become interesting later on. That was an old graph that I did in relation to where I thought coal production would be circa 2015. Things have changed a little bit since then, but just to give you the sense that it's been increasing over time consistently. This is a proportion. This is not interesting. This is the proportion of coal produced in each of the states. But you can see Queensland as a relatively low producer. Around about the mid-1970s, we started to really ramp up production. And it's just, I guess I want to make a couple of points. One is that Queensland is obviously the major coal producer in terms of black coal in Australia. The other is that level of increase of which has been pursued, and you can go through and you can map that against the different political parties that have been in power at any given point in time, and just to further demonstrate that point, that really it doesn't matter who's in power, Queensland is still regarded as the quarry state, as far as any politician that's ever been in power in the state has been concerned. This just sort of points out something that I wanted to mention before in terms of the black coal, where it goes in Queensland. As you can see, domestic use, so this is all of our power use for coal. We don't use very much of our metallurgic coal, the hard stuff. The thermal coal, we use about 20% of the total production is used domestically, and consistently more than 80%, and sometimes as much as 85% of our coal is exported. Now, this is this is what gives rise to this whole issue around climate change, because under the UNFCC, what are they called? Under the agreements, in terms of who counts for the carbon emissions, it's not counted from the point of production; it's counted from the point of burning. Yeah, point of the emissions burning. Which means that the majority of the coal that's produced in Australia and in Queensland is not counted as part of our emissions. It's not counted as part of what we're contributing to climate change. Now, there's a really important equity issue here, because what actually happens is that we're exporting our coal to countries that are then using that as a basis to produce cheap manufacturing goods that we then purchase back. All the while, we're not accounting for any of the carbon emissions, which are a direct result of our activities, and that we're actually using as the basis for our lifestyle and so forth. So it gives rise to that kind of global inequity in terms of, of being able to point the finger at countries like China and India and saying, your emissions are increasing, you know, you need to change all of the things that you do, as the same time as we're sort of blindly realising that, you know, or blindly perpetuating the use of that coal in order to satisfy our needs. This is my most fundamental problem with the notion of carbon neutrality. You see people talking about we're going to become carbon neutral, and it's a big phase in the EU where countries are saying we're working towards carbon neutrality. They're only working from carbon neutrality from a nationalistic perspective. And the way that they're doing that is that they're getting all of their manufacturing and all of the things that they used to do that had carbon emissions has actually been exported to southern countries and majority world countries, if you like. So there's a big equity issue, I think, in relation to not counting carbon emissions from the point. There's a history as well, I think, of being able to sort of say, rather than just looking at the point of use, we can look at the whole cycle. And I think of the nuclear industry and campaigns against the nuclear industry as illustrations of this, in the sense that over time we started to recognise, well, the uranium mining is actually part of the nuclear industry. And by opposing and by holding people accountable for the mining, and we're also holding people accountable for the whole of the cycle. So all is not lost, even though there will be, in Australia, there will be massive opposition to the idea that we should count carbon emissions from the point of extraction rather than the point of use. So this is sort of follows on from that in terms of identifying where our export markets are. This might surprise you, actually, because we hear constantly about China. China's driving our demand, China's driving our expansion of our industry. China amounts for about 3% of our total export market of Queensland coal. And in fact, China is a net exporter of coal. the demand for coal is not being driven by China. Japan, it might surprise you, is as much as 40%. India is a much greater issue. But I think we need to be really careful about sort of responding to those ideas that it's all about the level of demand that China has that's driving the expansion of our industry in Australia. It's not. The other point that's interesting about this in terms of the future of the coal industry and whether or not it's viable on its own terms, a lot of those countries that don't have names against them, and some of them that do, are actually part of the UN, or have signed on to the Kyoto Protocol as Annex 1 countries, and they're looking to create reductions in their carbon emissions, which means that the likelihood that they will still continue to be customers on the same scale of Australian coal as what they are now might be compromised. We might see actually a big shift away from coal in those countries that have signed on. So they might not be the source of our demand into the years to come. This is partially an explanation for the expansion of coal. You can see that over time, the level of growth in the coal industry and the level of the increase in value, particularly circa 2006, or 2005, 2006. The problem with this graph was, though, that I did it in March. And the little dip in the tail starts to tell a bit of a story there. That's around about the time. So March is around about the time that the impacts of the flooding of the coal mines in the Bowen Basin were starting to take place. And that had the effect of increasing the price globally. But the extent to which wasn't really known until the 1st of April, when there were contract negotiations between BHP and Nippon Steel. And those contract negotiations, so there's multiple ways in which the price of coal is determined, but one of them is through contracts that last for 12 months. Now, the contract price that BMA was able to get for a ton of coal was $300 per ton. Now, look where this sits on here. The average price had dipped well below, in the mid-90s at that particular point in time. We're talking about a tripling of the value of coal at that particular moment as a result of the contract signing. The same time, the contract for thermal coal went from about $65, $70 up to $125, that's US. So we had a doubling of thermal coal and a tripling of metallurgical coal in the space of in less than a month. It wasn't clear at that point what impact that would have on the average prices at the ports and the spot prices. But last month, ABARE, which is the Australian Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics, released their commodity forecast for 2008-2009. And they predicted a 207% increase in the value of metallurgical coal and an 125%, so tripling the value of metallurgical coal and a doubling of the value of thermal coal. Now, if they're right, and there's no reason to suspect why they wouldn't be, they're pretty authoritative in their modelling, and those contract prices are probably indicative. I mean, I don't think that the negotiators would have got it wrong in terms of securing a price for 12 months. So if they're right, then the graph exactly 12 months from now will look like this. So effectively we're talking about a situation where a commodity that was worth on average about $50 a tonne in 2002 were worth about $230 a tonne just 5 years later. I mean, if you needed an explanation for why the Queensland government is going nuts with the coal expansion, I think it's pretty, I mean, it's as crass as it is, as it is blatant. What's driving the increase of coal prices? It's a bit of a mystery, but the upshot, really, in a lot of ways, is the question of supply. So the impact of that flooding within, as I said, a climate change-infused impact, the flooding of the Bowen Basin cut down the supply coming out of Queensland. The infrastructure constraints within New South Wales couldn't match the expanded demand. At the same time, you had snowstorms in China. So people were increasing the amount of thermal energy, the thermal coal that they were burning to meet those, in order to do that, you had them running out. So China decided, no, we won't export any of our thermal coal, we'll keep it and keep our power stations going. So that's a reduction of supply. South Africa reduced its supply into the market as well, and as a result, the price just went through the roof, which has some pretty profound implications for any attempt to stop supply that we might undertake through direct action or other things. Because the flip side of it is that once the price reached this amount, every country, and there are a lot of countries with fairly significant stockpiles of coal, are going to ramp up production to meet the hole in the market. Yeah. So what's the Queensland government done in response to this expansion in the coal industry? Oh, this is a continuation of those projections. So with a fairly, if that statistic is right, then with a fairly modest increase in volume of around 7% in metallurgical and 6% in thermal coal, we're looking at an increased export value of the coal industry in Australia from $26.6 billion to $54.9 billion in 12 months. This time next year, that industry will be worth $54.9 billion. And I noticed that I didn't have a graph on this one, so I thought I'd put a graph in there as well, just in case people got a little bit confused. What's the Queensland government done? Well, you know, not one to be concerned with equity. First thing they did was they increased the royalty on coal exports from 7% to 10% for all of the value over $100, and that came into effect as of the 1st of July. It didn't affect anybody, really. The anticipated revenue from coal royalties is up from $1.02 billion to $3.21 billion. So it's risen from about 3% of Queensland state government income to about 9% of the income revenue stream of the Queensland government. That's projected.
It's great. They can build more roads, isn't it?
They can build more roads and airports. Well, this is the upshot, yeah? Like, there is such a dependence on coal revenue for the Queensland government. I mean, you know, we're talking in the order of 10% of total income. So to give you a sense of the scale of the impact that would have if we were to end the coal industry, well, we're talking about, you know, one in 10 less road building extravaganzas schools that they might undertake, but it's one in 10 less hospitals, and it's one in 10 less schools, and it's one in 10 less investments by the state government in climate change mitigation activities and so forth. Well, 1 in 10 less police, so it's, you know, strikes and gutters. But it's also, you know, presumably 1 in 10 less people employed by the state government.
1 in 10 across the world.
The impact will be quite significant. I just wanted to make that point. But really, the most important thing to see here is that the Queensland government's going to earn an extra. It's up 158% on their income from coal revenue over the last year. So maybe they're thinking, this looks like a bit of a cash cow. What else have they done? They released that. So remember that graph from before, how I projected it into the future? The Queensland government released their statement of their aspirations for the future of coal. And Anna Bligh said, as little as 2 weeks ago, she said, we will be exporting 370 million tonnes by 2025. So you can start to see that the angle on that graph has increased quite considerably in terms of the target that they've set for themselves. 370 million tonnes. At the moment, the total world volume of metallurgical coal is around 250. There's a reason why they call these things booms, but I don't know how to break it to the Queensland government. You know, it's not a boom if it goes on for. They don't call it a boom because it goes on forever. Do you know what I mean? Like, they call it a boom because it happens and then it dissipates. But anyway, that's the new projections that they're aiming for, and the way that they're doing this is fairly rudimentary as well. This is a slide that I put together as little as 2 months ago, to talk about what we were looking, and we couldn't believe it then, you know, that at the time of climate change and you know, the need to cut back on our coal, we were looking to expand our export capacity from 170 megatons to 340, and there was this proposal for Wiggins Island for 70 million tons worth of coal per annum to be expanded through there, and we were like, how can they be doing that at this particular point in time? Well, as of 2 weeks ago, I had to revisit this slide because it's no longer, it gives any sense of the picture. We'll look on to the next one. We had the proposal of two more. Port Alma for 30 megatons, potentially more, and Shoalwater Bay through a wilderness area, 100 million tons. 100 million tons of coal to be exported. That's the one that's going to open up the Galilee Basin that I spoke about before. Wiggins Island is the one to open up the Surat Basin, which I spoke about before. So these are two currently untapped basins, yeah? So the projection at this particular point in time is to move from 173 megatons per annum to 489 million tons per annum of coal export capacity. I don't even know what to say. Other than that, there's three of those in particular that are at various stages, early stages of development. And whilst at this stage, there's an extent to which that they, you know, there's still opportunities, I guess, to mount opposition to them in various sorts of ways. A lot of that export capacity is just being, you know, is just being slated on the back of these current numbers, and in particular in terms of the Queensland government being able to reap the benefits from the expanded global prices. Graph same thing. But I guess that ultimately the point is to look at the maroni coloured bars there. I guess in the sense of the extent to which that expansion is happening over the next 5 to 10 years, or actually over the next 2 to 10 years, it really gives you a sense of where this is heading and how the Queensland government intends to meet that extended demand of 300, or that target of 370 million tonnes per annum by 2025. The other thing that's happening, obviously, to support this is the expansion of the coal rail. And again, looking at a situation where currently you have a bit of parity in between your port capacity and your rail capacity. But if you don't have the rail, you can't get the coal to the ports, yeah? So you need to up the rail as well. Already slated, not even without the expansion of the new ports that are being proposed, you're looking at an expansion of 178 megatons to 237. But I just want to show you on the next slide where these... So that's within the existing ones. You'll be able to see... I'll just show you really quickly. There's two particular rail expansions that are being slated and are currently under assessment. The first one's called the Southern Missing Link, and it goes from here to here. And that's basically about getting the coal from the Surat Basin in places like Wondowan to the ports at Gladstone. So the ports are at Gladstone. There's a pitiful port at Brisbane. I mean, it's still 8 million tonnes per annum, but it's fairly small by Queensland standards. There's ports in Mackay, or Mackay Serena, Dorimple and Hay Point, and there's a port in Bowen called Port Abbott. So the first expansion of the rail is said to go through here, and that will open up all of the Surat Basin, which lies somewhere around here. The second bit of missing link, so they're called the missing links because they're pretty obvious where they go. The northern missing link goes here, and that's about taking the northern Bowen Basin up to Bowen, where the port at a point is being expanded as well. I always get a bit confused as to where Shoalwater Bay is. I think it's here. The Galilee Basin, which is somewhere around here. Yeah. So in order for the proposal for this new, the first new coal port to be proposed in 25 years, incidentally, it's not a small announcement, but to get the coal from here to here, they're looking at 500 kilometres worth of train line cut across there as well. I've got another map that I did, which actually maps the current coal mines over the top of the existing train, because some of that looks a bit random, yeah, but when you see where the coal locations are, you start to go, oh, it gets quite depressing, actually, in terms of... Of course, expansion of rail lines is always slated as a climate change mitigation activity as well. Well, we're reducing cars by increasing trains. Well, depends what's on those trains, maybe. Expansion of production, there's 40 mines. That's down from previous years. So there's been a few closures, some not as a result of anything, untoward or any kind of concession to climate change, just because they've run out of coal. But at the moment, presently, there's 28 what they call advanced coal projects, which is 17 new mines and 11 expansions of existing mines. And there's 38 less advanced coal projects, which are under assessment and they're in various stages. But they're advanced enough for them to be promoted to the Department of Mines and Energy in Queensland. That's not even an exhaustive list of the level of expansion that's happening, but those are the ones that are being considered by the state government as of interest. And a lot of those are located in the Galilee Basin and the Surat Basin, which I mentioned before. Not surprisingly, I mean, I don't have 2007 to 2008 figures in terms of what impact that massive price spike has had on exploration and exploration permits, but you can guarantee that every person and their dog with half an idea about how to find a coal seam is out on the ground at the moment looking to locate that. It will be interesting over time to see how far off the scale that graph goes in terms of the investment in private exploration and also the permits. Where's the coal located? These green dots, they don't really look green, but the green dots are they're coal deposits. They're identified coal deposits. Now, I have access to that data, which means that this is probably not a very accurate list of where the coal is located. It's 2002. It's from Geoscience Australia, so they release a statement of where. So these are untapped coal deposits, and you can see a few around the place where they're located. There's no shortage, is the upshot of this. There's not any time soon going to be a shortage of the possibilities for coal and the possibilities of significant profits from the mining and export of coal in Queensland. So I said we can't rely on a political party to reduce the amount of coal. We can't rely on economic forces. We're narrowing it down a little bit, I think. The upshot of it all is this, yeah? Current CO2 emissions from the Queensland coal industry is 378 million tonnes per annum, give or take, depending on the coal, depending on how much is burnt. But that's a fairly broad estimate. The projected emissions of CO2 by 2025, assuming that 370 megatonnes per annum target and a 1.3% growth in domestic demand, is looking around the order of 848 million tonnes per annum. Let's put that into context. Australia's total emissions is about 550 million tonnes per annum.
And that doesn't include the emissions from the export?
That doesn't include the export emissions.
That's just from
the... Yeah. So I've included the export because as far as I'm concerned, they're all the emissions of the Queensland coal industry. I've probably gone on longer than I should, but that's pretty much... I think that's the end of what I wanted to talk about. But just to really put that into context, this is an expansion of 2025. All estimates say that we should be reducing our greenhouse gas emissions at that stage by 60% if we're to avert dangerous climate change. This is something in the order of a doubling and a half again of our current export, our current greenhouse gas emissions. It just doesn't make any sense. But that's enough of the background fundamentally, because I'd like to now invite people with more popular things to say about what we can actually do about this to speak after me. So thanks for your attention.